Alright, so sorry that we just don't have power up here, so the lighting is obviously very terrible. So that's what's happening on our end. We just have an extension cord, just enough to power a few things. So, no lights. Mindfulness and concentration we're going to do together as one. Because this is most easily discussed as samatha and vipassana. I mean, that's really what this comes down to. So, I think everybody here is in the bodhisattva class or has taken a bodhisattva class, right? The Lojong? Yeah, so you guys are already very familiar with this. So the right mindfulness aspect is referring to the ability to focus the mind properly with that sharp focus or scope. We've discussed that when we're watching the breath, we are focusing very clearly on a support. So the breath would be a support. It could be the movement of walking as the support. But it always refers to a supported focus. And there's nothing else that the mind is focused on. So mindful really is that tunnel vision, microscopic view. And he says, so you need to maintain this pure and thoughtful mind. When do we maintain it? Well, we can't maintain that 24/7. That's a ridiculous concept. And it doesn't mean that. What it does mean is that when we are doing something that requires that kind of precision, that we have developed well the ability to do that, to focus our attention on it and keep our attention from wandering somewhere else. Or at least be trained well enough that when the attention does start to wander, we can gently bring it back to the target. Our language, English is kind of messy here. Because we say stuff like pay attention, we have words like mindful, we have concentration, we have, there's a lot of them. In English, they all kind of mean the same thing. But in Sanskrit, they don't mean the same thing at all. They are drastically different. In the reality, mindfulness is almost trance-related. We're so zeroed in on the object that nothing, we're oblivious, literally oblivious to everything else. And we don't really have that term in English for that. We say stuff like zoning out, but then the problem with that is, yes, you have the oblivious to everything around you, but you lack the sharp concentration. Then we use the word concentration, which is not the word, that's not the right word in Sanskrit's term. So, this is another one of those areas where it is of great benefit to stop using English. Unless we coin some kind of a phrase for it. So mindfulness really is that shamatha clarity. And it really refers to our ability to meditate. So we're having to develop that, develop it well. Of course, in a Lojong, you'll get, you know, much more deeper. We'll go in deeper to both of these, but for the purpose of this, for a Sunday, we'll just take it at this level. So concentration, again, terrible word for this concept. Concentration, as we look, it says, means to keep the mind right and tranquil for its concentration, seeking to realize the mind's pure essence. What the hell does any of that mean? That's what that makes no sense in English at all.
Uses the word in the sentence.
I mean, it really doesn't. So we dump it and we say, Vipassana means to keep the mind right and tranquil, calm, without being scattered, but limiting its activity as to be aware to its full surroundings. This way, we can perceive the nature of our mind. How? That's important. Now watch this. We're going to go somewhere where we need all of our faculties, our mental faculties, wide open. Okay? So that means we are going to pay very close attention to what we see, hear, smell, and feel all at the same time. Okay? It's like when we go to Disneyland or something and we say, I want to take in everything. Well, that means you want to hear the sounds and you want to see the sights. You want to be in touch with the feeling of the energy of being there. I mean, if that's your kind of thing, or a sporting event, whatever it might be, you're trying to get the whole of the experience. And the best way to do that is to not fixate on any one thing, right? If we don't fixate on one thing, we tend to be able to take in a lot more information. Granted, that's not extremely detailed information, but we are taking in a lot of information. This is what is being referred to here. When it's not fixated, the mind is actually quite calm because it's not having to work or process through anything. When we sharply focus or fixate on something, we have all of the stories of that something and we have all of the outer sense data to work with of that something. Okay? We fixate, that means we really need to engage and work with this thing. It's a matter of, what are we going to do with this information? So, that precision shamatha is kind of, if you're making a repair on something, or if you're trying to balance your checkbook or something like this, you are really having to focus in the details. And you're needing to approach the details with all of the variables happening. We add here, we subtract here, we add this again, we subtract that. You know, that whole balancing thing. Oh, and then this came in, but that went out to this thing, and that's leaving me with that thing, and you have all the details to work with. And you're not paying attention to what's going on the radio, the television, or anything else. Or fixated on the topic. The same is true with the breath. That's why the Buddha wants you to literally label and classify everything that's happening with the breath. Oh, look, I'm breathing in. So for the entire time you're breathing in, try and get every detail of it. For that time frame, you're breathing in, get as much detail about that in-breath as possible. Fixate on it. Pay attention to nothing else. That's why we say, how does it feel going in the nose? How does it feel in the lungs? How does it feel? How does it feel? How does it feel? How does it feel? Tell me everything. So how was it? Tell me everything, right? Like the paparazzi. So we're trying to do that with samatha, because that's the fixate. Now, in this concept of vipassana, this quote-unquote concentration, we don't want to do that because we miss everything else. But here's the thing. We're trying to get a 360 scope. We're trying to get all of it. Like, we can hear the people screaming in the background. We don't know why they're screaming, but they are. Maybe it's a roller coaster. Maybe it's, some other kind of ride. Maybe, who knows? But there's something going on over there. There's something going on over there, something over there, something over here. You can smell all different types of foods going on. There's just all this stuff happening. You see all of the colors of the flowers everywhere, because there's gardens all throughout the entire park. It's flooded with them. But you're not fixating on, oh, what kind of flower is it? It's just you see the reds and the golds and the blues and greens and everything's all over the place. There's some kind of character coming out over there. But you don't look hard enough to see who it is. If you do, you fixate on that. Oh, look, it's one of the queens, right? And so if you then... your mind is now on that and you're losing the big picture. See what happens? That shift. There are times where we need to get the details of who that is. And there's other times where we need the big picture. Why big picture? Why is that one the essence of mind one? Does anyone know?
Open.
What does that have to do with recognizing essence of mind?
You just empty, just like whatever comes in.
What does that have to do with an understanding the nature of your mind? No, I'm asking. Because that's usually what people tell me. Oh, it's that open state. What does that have to do with the nature of your mind? If you're trying to discover the nature of your mind, what is that that you're doing? You're...
I was going to say our mind encompasses everything.
Well, now see, everybody wants to go there. That's what everybody's trying to do. Here's the mistake. We are not talking about the ultimate nature of your mind. Because the ultimate nature of your mind doesn't cause you problems. Remember, we come to Buddha Dharma in order to fix the problem that we have. So if we're always looking at, oh look, I have Buddha nature, but you're never looking at the thing that causes you to not realize your Buddha nature, how's that going to do anything for you? So if we sit around going, oh look, I can just calm my mind down and there's nature of my ultimate mind. What does that do to help you when suffering arises? Anything? I mean, that fails me terribly. It always has. I can sit there and look in the mirror and tell myself I'm a Buddha all freaking day long and it does nothing. That is of no help. Because that's not the part that's broken. What part is broken? Anyone know?
The relative.
The relative mind is broken. If that's the thing that we need to fix, wouldn't we want to know the nature of the relative mind? Because that's the thing that tricks us and fools us, and we never know what it does. That's the thing we have no idea of its nature. Because Buddha won't tell us. He just says, nature of relative mind is delusion. Well, what is that? And then he says, the nature of ultimate mind is all of this, and we fixate on that, like a moth to a candle. We're all about that light. Oh yeah, show me that. But we do nothing to fix our problems. This is why we have such a hard time applying these kind of things to our practices. It's because we keep overshooting. We keep wanting to go immediately to the ultimate. Let's just go to Bodhisattva land. Let's just go to Buddha land. Let's just go to Pure land. Let's just go to, Tara's lap and screw all this other stuff. This is not Christianity. There's no savior that's going to do that for you. Fixating on the ultimate is not going to fix your problem in the relative. You can tell yourself about how great your ultimate nature is and how fantastic you are as a bodhisattva and a Buddha and a this and a that. And look, I'm Shiva for crying out loud. I've created everything, but it won't help you stop drinking. It's not going to help you balance your finances. It's like somebody builds you a boat and they say, ultimately, ships are amazing because you can go from LA to Tokyo. That's cool, right? So let's fixate on that. I'm going to sail all the way to Tokyo. Stop in Hawaii on my way. Okay, that's great. But there's a problem with your ship. It has a hole in it. And we say, who cares? We'll just fixate that we can travel across this ocean and reach the other shore. And every time we leave the dock, we go, and it sinks and hits the bottom of the ocean. And we go, oh, hell, that didn't work. I guess I'm not really a Buddha. No, you're fixating on the wrong problem. You're fixating where there is no problem, which is the concept that a ship can sail across to the other shore. Yes, that's absolutely true. Does it mean you can? No, it does not. Not until you fix the hole. The hole is a relative problem. Where am I going with this? Well, let me show you. Because now, if we can do this great concentration, and we're able to focus in, oh look, it's the queen from Sleeping Beauty, right? Woo, she's so fantastic. Everybody loves her. We want to marry her. Blah, blah, blah. Okay, great. Give me some more of those poison apples because you're so awesome. So we hook up with her and we focus all of our attention on there and it's great and we're oblivious to the rest of the world around us. We have no idea what's going on. But we're able to focus on every detail. We know what her fingernails look like, the shape that she files them, what color she paints them, the whole thing. We know the exact number of the shade of her MAC lipstick, because she does get her lipstick from MAC. She uses MAC, if you wanted to know. Oh, what kind of makeup does she wear? MAC. Go to the MAC store in the mall. She doesn't use Estee Lauder or any of that, or in the YC. She uses MAC. She's a MAC girl. It's true. Her eyeshadow, all of it's MAC. Although, I do have to admit, sometimes, she uses Max Factor. But that's only when she's shooting. So if they're going to, like, do a scene, and she's got to go on stage or on camera, she uses Max Factor. But if it's for daily wear, MAC. Okay, so look, we have all this detail. That's the fixation part. That's the shamatha. We know everything about the detail. We know how the air feels coming into the body. We know how it feels going out of the body. We know what it feels like in the body. We know what it feels like when it's engaging the blood and the way the body reacts to having to expand and contract. And so you see what I mean? We have all the detail, like the detail of the witch, the queen. She's not really a witch. People that don't like her call her that. She's a queen. Right? So, we know all the details about her. We even know where she gets her clothes from. Can anyone guess? Anyone want to guess? It's not Hot Topic, I'll tell you that. She's way too high class for that. Yeah. Most of it's from Neiman Marcus. Just in case you wanted to know. But she does have a lot of stuff made specifically for her by high-end designers because she's a queen. She just says, hey, I need a new black cocktail dress. Right now. Right now. Two smokes. Let's go. And then, you know, they sew it up, hand it to her. She's ready to go. And they fit it right to her, right? She doesn't have to mess with any of that. All tailored. This is what we mean by shamatha. Fine detail of everything. But guess what? While we're engaging that, we have no idea what's going on in our relative mind. So as all these details come up, we're just reacting. And how are we reacting? Habitually. Well, I don't like Mac. I prefer to use, you know, some like Clinique or some weird all-natural junk. Yeah, whatever. That's why the colors aren't as bright. Huh? Now look, I'm not here to start a war about makeup. That's not my job. But this is what happens. The details come in, and we automatically react. Well, I prefer Nordy's over Neiman Marcus. Okay, then let's have a fight. Let's go out in the parking lot and duke it out. We'll see what store's better. What, by throwing fists? That's ridiculous. But that's what we do. So the right concentration is we drop details. We put ourselves in a surrounding where we get a 360-degree awareness of all the senses. So we're in the Disneyland park and everything is going on around us and we're just kind of marveling at the wonder of the whole package, the whole scene. Now here's what we're supposed to do. While we're completely open to all of this stuff, not fixated on anything, our ability to have this shamatha concentration in the background. Listen, very careful. I'm going to give you the secret key right now. In the background of the mind, it is gently watching the nature of the relative mind. And so, when something in your vast environment field view pops up and it causes a reaction in the relative mind, that's what you look for. You want to see that. That's the nature of the arisings of your anger, of your greed, of your arrogance, of your passion, of whatever it is. Those poisons that cause you your problems arise due to a story in the environment. And you need to be able to catch it. It's like letting the boat or the ship out of the dock and you start sailing and you're paying attention to all the other boats out there. You're paying attention to the waves. You're paying attention to everything. But at the same time, you kind of got an eye down on the caulking. Is any of the bulkhead leaking? If it is, you take notice. Okay, well, it starts to leak as soon as we go out past the breaker and the water gets heavy. You have to begin to become keenly aware of when and how the relative mind arises, because it's going to swap. So at first, if we're good in Vipassana, yeah, we can sit there and we can experience that wide openness of the... Look, there's my so-called Buddha nature mind, all open and free. And then all of a sudden, what happens? Sleeping Beauty walks out and bang, everything goes to hell. Oh no, not her, she's gonna ruin everything. Snow White walks out, oh, for crying out loud. They're just here to take back the throne and kick out the queen that's in charge. This is horrible, right? And then you don't want that. So you revolt. Boo! Queen of filth, go back to your castle. Or your cave, or you know, your little glass box, or wherever you were at. Get out of here. Eat another apple. Touch another sewing machine. Just get out. Boo! Hiss. Right? Because they're a problem. But what we want to do is have this openness that when they do appear on the scene, we're very aware how the relative mind arises and how it stirs up all of its stories to perpetuate itself. And then as soon as, in our case of this story, a really wonderful thing happens, like she does eat an apple and passes out and they drag her out of the street and hide her away again. And then all of a sudden our mind is back at ease because the queen is now ruling again with no challenger. And everything is wonderful. Then we recognize how the relative mind dissolves back into ultimate mind and becomes calm again. It's that mind that we are wanting to see the nature of. It starts out as just a gentle swell, turns into a big, huge crashing breaker, smashes into the shoreline, destroying our sandcastle, and then all of a sudden it just gently fades right back out and disappears. So we have no problem with ultimate mind because it doesn't do any of that. None. Ultimate mind gives us no problem. And focusing on it won't fix the problem of the tide smashing into our sandcastles all the time. This is what is meant by right concentration. Being able to go into the environment and being able to be open to what's out there in order to perceive what's going on internally rather than externally. Is this making sense? Because when we can see the nature of our mind as a swell, a breaker, a smashing into the shore, and going right back out, we begin to recognize how our mind is a constant flux. And with that constant flux, we can begin to recognize what to do with our ship in order to stabilize it. It's the relative mind that needs to be tamed, not the ultimate. That's ridiculous. How are you going to tame a Buddha mind? We fixate on the wrong one. So, this Eightfold Path is then supported by the six great perfections, the six paramitas, which if you're in the Bodhisattva class, say no more, say no more. We'll be all into it. So, I hope that was helpful and beneficial and give some clarity of what we're doing with these different meditation techniques, and what exactly is meant by this understanding the nature of mind? Any questions on that at all? Oh, I wanted to use this, and this is a good time to use it. Ultimate mind is like looking at the entire earth and saying things grow on the earth. You don't need to do anything with planet Earth. It's like being on the space station. There's planet Earth. Hey, everything happens on it. It's all cool. The whole solar system works together. Everything's great. That's ultimate. Relative is you are in San Diego going, what do I need to do with this soil in order to grow this avocado tree? That's relative. Our problem is, how do we get this tree to grow and produce fruit? We don't have to worry about the big picture of the solar system. And looking at the solar system will not help our tree produce any good avocado. So I hope that analogy helps clarify it. Okay. Great. So I think we can go back to our text here.